And Joe Campbell is with us, Professor Joe Campbell, talking about, boy, the way the world really changed and how we see the world and how we heard the world really in 1995. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for being here. This is, as the morning has gone on, and we've tried to think about things that were occurring in 1995, more and more we are looking forward to you popping in and talking about this, because it was, what a heck of a year, not only in Cleveland, but really across the United States and the world, wasn't it?
Absolutely, it really was. It was a year of five watersheds, five major watersheds that all had lasting consequence, lasting significance,
right?
Not only in the United States, but beyond.
Okay.
And some of those watersheds include the Oklahoma City bombing,
right,
which took place in April 1995, killed 168 people,
sure,
and was the worst single act of domestic terrorism in the United States,
right,
and domestic terrorism.
Right.
And it set in motion efforts and measures to restrict place security measures in place across the country, and so we can see the beginnings of this security consciousness,
sure,
anti-terrorism security consciousness. It was the O.J. Simpson trial took place that year too,
right,
from January to October. It was also the year of the Dayton Peace Accords in Dayton, Ohio, when the United States brokered the peace agreement in faraway Bosnia, ending the worst war in Europe since the time of the Nazis.
Right.
It was also the year of the Internet. The Internet really gains traction, gains a critical mass, and becomes part of the public consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for Al Gore there.
That's right.
Yeah. If he hadn't discovered it.
If he didn't invent the Internet, where would we be today?
Yeah. He didn't invent it in 1995, but the Internet began, it sort of gains traction in 1995. Not everybody's online, but enough people are online that it becomes a phenomenon. And also in 1995, Clinton meets Lewinsky, they have their first sexual dalliance late in that year.
When did we find out? Was that 97 when we found out?
January 1998, when the scandal explodes, and it leads incredibly to the spectacle of the impeachment and trial of a sitting U.S. president. Mm-hmm. For the first time, an elected U.S. president is impeached and tried. Amazing. And that had its origins in 1995.
And how quickly information, true or not, did travel at that time because of, by way of the Internet. We were talking about it outside here before we went on, and that is that, when I started Channel 3 in 94, and I can remember the next year, everybody going around saying, well, now everybody's got an email address now. And all of us looking at each other going, email? Somebody wants to get a hold of me, they can call me. I don't need this email. It's, and now, I mean, we survive on it. It's with us, I mean, mobily. If you'd have said in 95, not only is this going to, but by the way, in about 20 years, it's going to be dinging, in your pants pocket, let alone, sitting down to this computer.
It's going to take over your life.
And
in many respects, it really has. And it's part and parcel of the Internet age. And in 1995, really was the year of the Internet.
It was kind of a novelty still at that point, and it was frustrating because of the stupid dial-up.
So to try and
find anything did take a long time.
It did. Yeah.
It was an interesting time for me because I was working at the library, and we were just starting to get Internet access available for the public. So I was one of the persons on the committee where we went and got training, and we trained the rest of the staff. So I actually had to take a trip to Chicago and learn everything. And I remember coming home and telling Brian, you've got to check this out. And we went online, and everything was text only. But we sat there for hours because they called it the information superhighway for a reason. Because it was like you took exit after exit after exit. You would start out in one place and just find so many different fascinating things. Yeah. You would end
up YouTube is now.
It was the information superhighway and a traffic jam back then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the dial-up
to download anything took ages.
That's right. And that handshake, the digital handshake when you made a connection online.
That noise. And then you'd hear you go.
Yeah. You never forget that noise.
That noise, the ping, ding.
To this day,
but then you knew, it's like, I'm connected.
Yes, I'm in.
I'm online. I'm in.
And then we had to do it all over again when everything became graphics-based and it wasn't just the text. So you had to learn it all over again. But it's so much better.
it's interesting how many digital mainstays took hold and sort of began establishing a presence in 1995. Amazon.com starts selling books in July 1995.
Wow.
eBay goes online and starts its first auctions in 1995. Match.com
Oh my gosh.
Is launched in 1995.
That is stunning.
The founders of Google, now Google isn't developed then, but the founders of Google, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, meet for the first time on the campus of Stanford University. And,
sort
of setting in motion the relationship that gave us Google. And at first, those guys supposedly did not like each other.
They thought each other was obnoxious and couldn't stand each other.
Can you imagine?
See, why don't we talk about the pioneers of porn, though? Because honestly is what the internet turned into.
It wouldn't have survived. There's a good chance it would just be something else that people do.
There's probably more porn sites than anything on the internet.
And it was an issue back in 1995 as well. Yeah. Time magazine in June or July, I think it was early June, had a cover devoted to cyber porn.
Right.
And the notion that children were accessing pornography online in great numbers and in great quantities. It was really overstated, but it helped to contribute to legislation called the Communication Decency Act that actually passed Congress, was signed by President Clinton in 1996, became law.
Isn't that ironic?
It was struck down by the Supreme Court in the unanimous decision in 97 or 98, but the Communications Decency Act was an attempt to regulate access to pornography, especially by young people. And it was way overblown, but nonetheless, it was a reality.
Clinton signed it, and then he lit a cigar to celebrate.
Yeah, right, or something like that. Now, we're here with Professor Joe Campbell is with us here right now. What are you a professor of? I should have asked that at the beginning.
I teach at the American University in Washington, D.C., in the School of Communication.
Okay.
And my billet is the Communication Studies program. I'm a former journalist. I was 20 years in the business, and my first job was 40 years ago at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I signed on at the Plain Dealer, covering the cops 6 at night to 3 in the morning and writing obits on weekends.
Oh, good.
And
wow.
And the thinking was back in the day that if you could cover the cops, if you can get along with the police, if you get stories from them,
you
can cover just about anything.
Yeah, and then you end up at city council and doing all those. If you can sit through, 4 hours of city council and get everything down, then you've done your time. That's like basic training.
And there's some truth to that.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit, and I'm glad you said that. Talk a little, and Chip and I talk about this all the time. When we were in school and just coming out, it was, you don't go with a story unless it was 3 sources originally.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe it was 2 at one point. And now it is get it out there and then apologize later. Is that something that
and
really
you don't even have to have a source?
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Because all you have to, it's the way you word it. Say, what we're
sources
hearing
tell
is
us.
This.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right. The sourcing could be far improved and far better. And, the internet, though, has an important corrective function. It is the home for lots of stuff that is thinly sourced or unsourced.
Right.
But at the same time, it has an immediate, almost immediate corrective function that sort of says, okay, if this big story is out there and the sourcing is suspect, others are going to pick up on it real quickly. I mean, Twitter, for example, is a great platform for correcting misinterpretation and misinformation.
But it can also give misinformation
at the same time.
Yeah, really, because the people who are online are not even journalists half of the time. They're just bloggers.
The
With Twitter, that's where you a lot of people, when there's some news going on, start tweeting about it. So you are getting on scene, on site sources didn't necessarily have access before.
And we have to be the filter somehow. Now, as the people that are digesting all of this, we have to be the filter if the theoretical filters aren't working, at that particular
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. And I think that there is a role for traditional news media to play in this filtering process, in this branding, if you will. Okay, it's the New York Times saying it. We can more or less believe that this is probably true.
Well, and we found out that that's not always the case.
But
the problem is that, especially in the electronic media, but television, the pressure to be first.
Oh, yeah. It's stunning.
And to be fast and not factual is stunning there's a lot of pressure on the people who
are out there. That pressure, though, can be managed. 6 years after I signed on at the Plain Dealer, I was working overseas for the Associated Press in Geneva, Switzerland. And AP and the wire services, I mean, that is the modus operandi, is to be first with the important news and to be accurate with it. And so AP, Agence France-Presse, Reuters, I mean, they all have a long tradition of reporting the news in a rapid manner, and then getting it correct and getting it right. And so the premium on getting it right and getting it fast can be managed and can be part of the media landscape.
So the onus really does come on the Twitter user. Like, you know, for all of us, I follow AP. You know, you have to follow those, what would be considered the more respected, the more trusted media outlets.
Exactly.
But you also have to be smart. You got to follow BuzzFeed.
That's right.
You have to, because a lot of, I know, I hate it, but
dude,
you know,
they send out way
TMZ,
too many things.
You have to
they
follow do. All of them. But
I had to stop following BuzzFeed because they would send out way too many things.
Every once in a while, yes, you're right. They put out and send out, but you have to have, because so many times they are on, and news to us is very different nowadays than what it used to be, even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Unfortunately, what the Kardashians are doing sometimes makes it into the B block, you know? So you have to follow BuzzFeed, because BuzzFeed or TMZ is going to have the information before the AP will.
That's true. But, you know, some of the critique that you were alluding to was resonating in 1995 with the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean, everybody was like up in arms.
Yes.
And went, oh, my God, this is just the end of the news media almost, because mm-hmm. of the exaggerations, the hyperbole. The National Enquirer is sort of leading the news
yes.
media, the traditional and respected news media, including the New York Times, on that story, breaking developments yeah. related to the Simpson
trial. They were scooping people.
They were. And the New York Times was giving them credit for it. Astonishingly.
That is hard to believe.
And that was a big deal. That was a big controversy back in 1994, 1995.
Think of the people who would not have careers right now if it weren't for the O.J. Simpson trial and the frenzy, the electronic media frenzy. Greta Van Susteren.
Greta Van Susteren's the first one.
Dan
right.
Abrams, who was with NBC yeah. and a bunch of different people.
TMZ.
You would have no idea who Trace these people
living.
Are
right.
if it was not for the need for pundits. Not only are we going to do 2.5 minutes on this story, but we're going to talk about it for five.
That's right.
And so we need somebody to do that for us, and yeah. it has to be somebody that has a law degree.
A lot of that can be traced to the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean,
yeah.
a lot of that was also in play then, but it really solidified, and you're right, it developed careers, it made careers mm-hmm. of many people, and they're still around 20 years later.
Talking with Professor Joe Campbell here, and now the book, you've got a book coming out, it's in the works right now. What's
That's
the
right.
process? It's called, what is it called, 1995?
Yeah, it's called 1995, The Year the Future Began,
okay.
and it's going to be published later this year by the University of California Press. The official publication date is January 2nd. 2015, so
right.
it's 20 years, you know, after.
Just in time for the students. Yeah, you were born this year.
Yeah.
Time to read all about it.
There's
yeah,
a fascination among students with the 90s. I mean, because they were born, because they are millennials, because they were born in the 1990s. And I taught a course, actually, this past spring semester on the American 1990s. Not
oh,
using
that's
my book.
Cool.
It's not out yet. But
right.
Well,
at least
I would have
it.
Otherwise.
You know what, Joe? Can you hold on? Can you stay with us? We're going to take a quick break here. We'll keep you up until the top of the hour here. Let's stand by. We're talking with Professor Joe Campbell. The book that it's on its way out is 1995, The Year the Future Began. More on that coming up. And a couple of minutes left here. We've got Joe Campbell to stick around with us here and talk a little bit more about the book that is coming out, 1995, and just really the year in general, and what a crazy, I mean, just a time that it was, and so many huge events did happen. We were talking a little bit off the air about the Oklahoma City bombings and the way that was reported, and the way we report now, maybe because of that.
In many respects, that's true, and the initial reaction was that this had to have been the work of Middle East terrorists.
Right.
And
right.
it was widely mm-hmm. believed and widely reported, actually.
Sure. Yes.
And to the shame of the news media at the time, because
yeah.
there was a guy who was traveling from Oklahoma City to Jordan that day.
Oh my.
And he was stopped and detained in Chicago, questioned at length, missed
oh,
his
boy.
Flight, connecting flight internationally, and then was allowed to continue on and was stopped again at Heathrow in London.
No kidding.
And arrested, detained, sent back to the United States. He was a suspect in the bombing, and because he looked Middle Eastern. He was
sure.
he was right. originally from Jordan.
Well, based on the 93
yeah.
World Trade Center bombing, I mean that was the MO, and so
that's right.
I mean, I don't think it's illogical to think that was a possibility.
That was before the term profiling really started to make
some
it.
Some people could argue though that if you took a look at the date of the bombing, April 19th, 1995,
right.
you'd see it was like
that
2 years to the day of the
Waco, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
The Waco
yeah.
attack,
the standoff with David Koresh
and
company.
That was when Waco
sure.
sort of the fiery inferno took
right.
place in April of 1993.
Yeah.
Was that
but they did
Ridge
that at their
too?
Own compound.
Right.
Yeah. But to me, it was unusual step for a domestic terrorist here to go and do that.
Right. Sure,
because you just didn't. I didn't want to believe that it was our own people.
Right. But Timothy McVeigh was the guy who did it, and with a small group of.
And who was his other guy? McVeigh and Terry Nichols
was his principal co-conspirator. There was a third guy who knew about it and helped McVeigh kind of case the Murrah Building, the federal building in Oklahoma City.
Didn't he turn on them? Wasn't he one of the guys that turned and then he got a little bit of lighter sentence?
Fortier was his name, and his wife also.
Oh, that's right.
Michael Fortier,
and Lori, his wife, testified against McVeigh, and I think they entered the witness protection program, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm. And Fortier and McVeigh were both in the military at the same. Were they in the same unit?
As was Nichols.
Okay.
They were military buddies. Disenchanted with the United States government and disenchanted with things like Waco, but others, the Ruby Ridge encounter in the early 90s.
Wasn't that a similar date, too? I feel like there are three dates that are all together.
Well, Columbine was around there.
Columbine was
the 19th as well.
The date that McVeigh had in mind as well was that of 1775 when Concord and Lexington took place. And these were the Patriots taking on the powers
and so forth.
And he, in his delusions, sort of picked up on that as well. So that was one of his important dates. So the date was chosen with those historical precedents in mind.
A fascinating year for sure. And whenever the book comes out, give us a call again. Well, I'm sure there's more stuff in there that we can dig through. Professor Joe Campbell, we'll call you a Cleveland guy because you spent time here.
That's right. I am a Browns fan, long-suffering, of course.
Every Browns fan.
Was the year when Art Modell took the Browns to Baltimore.
Yeah. The Indians went to the World Series for the first time.
What a team that was. But then they stopped hitting in the World Series.
Atlanta's pitching staff was...
I think it was pretty good.
There were buzz saws.
Formidable there.
Yeah. Awful. Well, we could talk about that all day, too.
That's right.
Professor Joe Campbell, 1995, The Year the Future Began. That's the book that you're working on, right? It'll be out soon. When is the rough release date again?
We'll probably see it out in April, October.
Okay.
And it's in production. It will be in production very soon.
Excellent. Maybe we'll be talking about a World Series.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about the World Series.
The Tribe made the playoffs last year.
We'll be talking about the World Series.
10 games out of first. We'll see what happens.